So the memories already flow. If we try to think about highlights of the summit, whether it would be the symbolic richness that we find in President Moon and North Korean Chairman Kim standing at the top of Baekdu Mountain together, or perhaps President Moon giving a speech to 150,000 North Korean people in the 1st of May Stadium of Pyongyang, or just looking anywhere in Pyongyang at the rows of sometimes women in colorful hanbok greeting both leaders, Chairman Kim with the initial welcome at the airport. It really was not only fantastic optics, but also the actual points of the Inter-Korean Summit Agreement, far more detailed than anything we saw earlier this year. Professor Andrew Yeo, Director of Asian Studies at Catholic University in Washington, D.C., co-editor of the book North Korean Human Rights, Activists and Network, joins us on the line. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you. Good morning. It's good to be with you.
Likewise. So, I mean, this has been a pretty successful week overall, hasn't it?
Yes, I would say, you know, this third summit between the two leaders of the two Koreas is really a turnabout from the events of last year with all the rhetoric and the threats, escalating threats that were taking place. So the fact that there's now a third summit, I mean, it is very significant. And for the Moon Jae-in government, it certainly looks like a big win on his part.
The U.S. is welcoming this generally, isn't it? Especially President Trump and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo suggesting dialogue's going to be getting up and underway very soon. And President Trump reiterating his willingness to meet Chairman Kim again.
Yeah, so it's been really interesting to see the reactions of President Trump and also Secretary of State Pompeo, because they do represent the government, and they were pretty quick in coming out with positive statements saying that this will help restart negotiations between the United States and North Korea. And, you know, President Trump had, you know, had a positive tweet. There's now discussions of maybe there might be another Trump-Kim summit, whereas after the first summit, the discussion was we'll probably not see another summit again unless President Trump has something more concrete to offer. So this really, I mean, the U.S. government itself seemed to take this third summit positively, and they're going to run with it and see if they can have some fruitful, meaningful negotiations. Now, that's not to say that everyone thinks it's positive. There's certainly skeptics here in Washington and elsewhere in the United States.
Well, speaking of that skepticism, is there a concern that President Trump will be talked down, that he'll be made to realize that there's no need to rush into another summit with Kim Jong-un just yet until there's a more concrete hope of progress?
Right, exactly. So like the run-up to the June 12th summit, much of the expert class, the think tanks, policy experts here have said we're suggesting that President Trump is moving forward too quickly, that he doesn't understand the implications, the ramifications of, you know, meeting the North Korean leader that would legitimize North Korea. And we're seeing some of those concerns again, even before the summit meeting between President Moon and Chairman Kim Jong-un. I mean, there's criticism in the U.S. that this is going to go counter against U.S. sanctions if North and South Korea are talking about things like an inter-Korea railroad or even setting up a liaison office. How is that going to happen without violating sanctions, U.S. sanctions? So there was already some concern, skepticism there, but now you have the president weighing in, President Trump weighing in very positively about this summit. So I think there is a fear that President Trump will give more than he should, that there's concerns about, of course, the alliance, about U.S. presence in Korea. I think a lot of people will be looking at whether President Trump is willing to make this end-of-war declaration, which President Moon obviously wants him to do.
From a humanitarian perspective, and I know that's one of your primary areas of interest, we've seen President Trump tweet in just the last 4 hours, the names of the two American remains from North Korea that have been identified. He gave their ages as well, 32 and 19 years old. calling them heroes, asking that they rest in peace and asking that their families can have closure. Is that a major breakthrough? But does it also suggest to us that so much of this is about President Trump appealing to his domestic audience?
Yes, I mean, I wouldn't say it's a major breakthrough, but certainly by tweeting about the these two remains of Korean War POWs or Korean War soldiers being returned, I mean, it's a signal saying that, hey, look, North Korea is keeping their end of the bargain, and this is all made possible because of the summit meeting I had, because of the dialogue I had with Chairman Kim, and it's for these reasons, you know, it may be worth, you know, having another meeting, another of moving forward with engagement. So I think it's a real signal for Trump to say that, hey, look, there are gains that are being made because of this, and look, we brought home these two bodies. So I think he's really preparing not just, you know, his base and those that support Trump and the American people, but also those that are skeptical about whether it's worth you know, having another meeting or pursuing engagement negotiations with North Korea. And the interesting thing about these two bodies is in the U.S., you know, when you talk about the remains of missing in action or POW killed in action, that's really sacrosanct. It's really something that everyone can say, yes, that's a good thing, that's a positive thing, and no one's going to deny that. So I think Trump is sending some signals, or at least setting up the context for him possibly being able to go ahead with U.S. DPRK negotiations.
Well, thank you very much, Professor Yeo. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Professor Andrew Yeo from Catholic University, Director of Asian Studies there. It's one thing to talk about humanitarian issues in the U.S., another to talk about North Korean human rights. That seems to have been sidelined somewhat as we've been reflecting already this week. But let's for now switch our focus to Dr. Mark Barry, independent Asian affairs analyst who's been following the U.S. And its relationship with North Korea for nearly three decades. And thank you for joining us.
Yes, good morning, Alex.
So what's your view on the significance of this week and the Pyongyang joint declaration?
It's a great breath of fresh air after maybe a difficult summer, but we were off to a great start because of the initial summit on April 27th between President Moon and Kim Jong-un. The Singapore summit was significant merely out of the fact that a sitting U.S. president was willing and accomplished meeting with his North Korean counterpart. But it's been a tough summer because of a real inability to get any meaty negotiations going between the U.S. And the North on the denuclearization issue. But I think President Moon has saved the day. I think it more than meets expectations. I think it goes beyond expectations. And President Trump is sensitive to these things, and that's why he tweeted practically with glee the other night how all of these results from the summit were exciting, in his words.
But he didn't particularly heap praise on President Moon as he might have done if, indeed, President Moon is playing such an important role.
Well, President Moon, yes, it's a praise on President Moon, but President Trump always makes it clear that whatever difficulties there may be, they're not on the level of himself and Kim Jong-un. That's very clear from a whole sequence of his tweets dealing with North Korea. Mm. He mentioned how he got just 3 or 4 days ago another great letter from Chairman Kim. So he's trying to show that it's the people under him and under Chairman Kim who are having the hard time. But I understand that. And I think this is a tremendous change from the way the relationship between the U.S. and North Korea was conducted over the past several decades, believe it or not.
The ball is back with the U.S. now after this summit, and Washington will have to make a decision pretty quickly. Is it going to offer another compromise? People seem to forget that the U.S. has already made some compromises, including suspending joint military drills this summer. But is there going to be a bigger one, like declaring an end to the Korean War, for example?
Well, I think, you know, you could have a statement between the two Koreas, more or less, with that sentiment, and President Trump could give a tweet and say, I support it. Great news. And that might be all he would need to do. But the nitty-gritty of arriving at an actual peace treaty is something that may be several years out. But the changing of the status quo and getting things, the dynamics moving in a completely different direction, that's something I think that we've seen from April to June and from June until now.
But Chairman Kim seems to be in a bit of a hurry. President Moon's certainly in a hurry. He's got a 5-year term and it's capped there. And we've been hearing the timeline January 2021, the end of President Trump's first term in office. Is it realistic to have denuclearization wrapped up by then? Because if that happens, there's no reason why everything else can't follow suit.
Well, I think you have to have simultaneous things going on. You absolutely have to have meaningful and irreversible progress between the U.S. and the North on the denuclearization issue. However, it's also the U.S. concern. The military situation between the two Koreas, because the U.S. has 28,000 troops stationed in the South, and so the confidence-building measures announced yesterday are also very important to the U.S. But, you know, we've seen a situation that's been around for 70 years. Korean War itself, the armistice is almost 70 years old. So, you know, whether we make it by January 2021, I think it's less the issue. The important thing is to change the dynamics, change the direction, and in the end, let's face it, you know, they may not completely denuclearize, but they will want a substitution for those nuclear weapons, and that has to be a strong security guarantee from the United States. And I've been told directly by senior North Korean officials in the past that friendship between the United States and North Korea is a more than adequate substitute for their nuclear program. It's something they wanted to achieve with George W. Bush. It was something that even Vladimir Putin had told Kim Jong-il in their Vladivostok summit in 2002 to try to achieve with Bush, but for a lot of reasons it didn't happen. So that security guarantee of trust between the two countries through a partial process of demilitarization, denuclearization, and normalization of relations, I think we'll make a gigantic world of difference in the coming couple of years.
Well, Dr. Barry, thank you for sharing your optimism with us this morning.
You're quite welcome.